This morning, what I want to do is I want to talk to you about some foundations for our church for 2015. There's kind of an outline there in the back of your bulletin, which kind of reminds me of a story. In the Sunday school class in one of the children's church, there was a little boy there, and they were really going through the book of Exodus as the beginning of this new school year. And Johnny was really fascinated with this whole creation account, including the little beings. And he was especially just amazed at how God was able to create Adam out of dirt and how he was able to create Eve out of the side of man. And some time went by, and Johnny one day wasn't feeling very well. And Mom goes up to Johnny, and Johnny's going, Oh, my side. And he's really like in pain and agony and moaning and groaning. And Mom goes, what's the matter? He says, oh, my side hurts so bad. I think I'm going to have a wife. In Ephesians, you don't need to turn there, but in Ephesians, when we were going through Ephesians 2, the last few verses of Ephesians 2, we talked about the teachings of the apostles and the prophets being the foundation, and then Jesus Christ being the cornerstone. And I was going through this year and just kind of thinking through a little bit of where we'd like to be. I'd like to start today with these five foundations that you see in the back of the bulletin. And again, as you can see, through the number in attendance here today, that we have some tremendous opportunities to see God work through this church in ways that maybe we haven't seen before, or it's been a while since we've seen God work in this way. Let's begin looking at these foundations and just how we really need to incorporate these values into our life, individually and collectively as a church. I believe one of the first foundations, or one of the core values, or one of the fundamentals that we must have going into this new year, whether it's individually or collectively, is worship. Worship. Jesus Christ there. In John chapter 5, verse 30, and I can read it. If you're quick with your Bible, go ahead and turn to it. But I want you to notice how much Christ was consumed or interested in himself versus how much he was consumed or interested about his Father. And he says here in John chapter 5, verse 30, he says, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgments are righteous, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. Then he goes on to say, the hour is coming and now is when true worshipers will still worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such who will worship him. We got to just continue to realize individually that our lives are not about ourselves. We must be willing to actively attribute the worth, the praise, the honor, and glory to God. And it's all about God, and it's very little about us. Paul, the Apostle Paul, as you saw, I kind of contrasted Jesus Christ teaching being God, and then I looked at some man perspective under the inspiration. And in 1 Corinthians 10:31, Paul says there in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether we eat or drink or whatever we do, what are we supposed to do? And again, it's so profound, because even just the basic elements of eating and drinking, I mean, this isn't necessarily waxing eloquent in front of people. This isn't necessarily doing your presentation at your job, you know, and trying to make the big sale or whatever it is. Just the mundane moments of life need to be pleasing to God. But then when we have corporate worship is huge. And it's even huge for Oxford Valley Chapel. And again, as we look, and I know, you know, Nathan and Jess, we lost five people there as he's pastoring up there, and the other gardeners are gone, so there's five people there as they're up for the funeral. And Robin Smith and his family is going down to Virginia to take Angelo back home, and on it goes. But still, there's not a lot of people here. But, you know, if we could all from everybody that's on the rolls of the church gather together on Sunday morning, wouldn't that be a little more encouraging? And some of you are shaking your head. I mean, just for me personally, as we look up and see one whole section here basically empty, no offense to you that are sitting there, but it is just a little disheartening. And one of the ways that we truly can be a blessing to others and then also receive a blessing is that we see the family gather together. And usually you'd think the first Sunday of the month, everybody would want to come because what's going to happen here in about 20 minutes? Yeah, food. Food. I mean, you get a free meal. But seriously, we really need to consider, and I know I'm preaching to the choir because y'all are here, and trust me, I'm very grateful for that, but we need to make a conscious effort that, again, church, this worshiping on the first day of the week is not a man-made concept. This was taught in the early church. The first day of the week, the Christians, whether it was at Colossae or Ephesus or Corinth, they gathered together to worship God together. Now, it is true, yes, there's nothing sacred about the 10:45. We can meet any time during the day we want, but the first day of the week, we should gather. And I would just encourage you this new year, and again, I understand I'm preaching to the choir, but I would just encourage that, you know, unless I'm really providentially hindered, or like my wife has 101 temperature today, barring 101 temperature, I'm here. I'm here. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why we need to be here on a Sunday morning, which comes to the next point, to fellowship. Fellowship. And if you have your Bibles open to John, you cannot get away from the eternal fellowship that God the Father has with God the Son and God the Holy Spirit. And in John 10:38, notice what he says there. But if I do, though you do not believe me, believe the works, that you may know and believe that the Father is in me and I in him. There is a perfect fellowship, oneness, connectedness, obviously, that the triune God has with each other. You and I need to have that same connectedness, that same oneness. Acts chapter 2 says, so they continued daily with one accord in the temple, breaking bread from house to house. They ate their food with gladness and with simplicity of heart. We try, and we have been trying, to cultivate a church family here at Oxford Valley Chapel. We don't have the facilities. We don't have some of the programs. We don't have some of the things that other churches have. But one of the things that we can have that they don't, because it's kind of hard to have a family concept when you've got thousands of people attending. But we can really have a church family. And for some, we're really the only families that some have, either because they've relocated and their families, like my family's in Minnesota and Robin's family's in Florida. You are our family. We have no other family around. And there's others in that same situation. And there needs to be a kindred spirit here. And here's another reason why. Because life is hard. Life is very hard. And I would like every Sunday morning that everyone here could leave encouraged. Not necessarily because what I have said, but because of what the brothers and sisters have said to one another, either before or after the service. Hopefully not during. But let me give you an example, just to put an exclamation point on the need for us to be building relationships and having fellowship and one accord and connectedness with each other. Just recently, someone who is affiliated with our church, because I don't want to give away too much identifying information, got an email, and the email sounded something like this. Hi, y'all. Last year, I was kind of MIA. This year, I want to be more in touch with the family, and I'm going to try to be emailing or connecting with the family at least once a month, and I want to be open and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then the letter goes down a little bit further, and then the individual says, speaking of openness, you know, I got to be truthful with you, and that is, I'm coming out of the closet. Okay? So now they come to church, hearts are heavy, and hi, how are you, bye, and then that's it. And a whole week goes by, and then we come back into church again, hi, how are you, bye, and another whole week goes by. We need to have the fellowship. There needs to be that one accord. There needs to be that connectedness. There needs to be relationships that we can come and be that safe harbor from the horrible storm that's out there. We need to be able to forge and further relationships that we can pray for one another and cry with one another and rejoice with one another. There needs to be those kinds of relationships. And as we're looking around us here, that's not that difficult of a task. If we were running multiple services and had thousands of people, you go, yeah, right. But, you know, there's only about 3-4 people sitting around each of you there, and there's only 3 people here, and there's only about 3-5 people sitting around you. We could do this. This is a real possibility that we could connect with one another and build relationships. And again, I don't need to go through the litany of heartaches, but there's even someone here today I know, because I was over there this week, and their hearts are heavy. Hearts are crying and literally tears, and they come to church maybe hoping for some encouragement or blessing because that's where the family is coming and that's where I'm safe, and it's, hi, how are you, bye, and we'll wait till next week, and hi, how are you, bye, and we'll wait another week. We need to be forging and furthering the relationships where we can go to someone and say, I think, what's wrong? You don't look right. And they can feel safe to say, you will not believe what happened. My world is crashing around me, and I need some help. I need a godly lady that I could just cry with for a moment. I need a godly man that I got my mind, I just don't know where to go. Is there not a man that I can talk to and run things by and come alongside and help me down this very scary road? We need to kind of embrace this three musketeer motto. Any of you like Dumas? Well, what's the three musketeers slogan? One for all and... We need to embrace that. We need to embrace that. We need to embrace a fellowship mentality. As said on our front page of our website, we need Oxford Valley to be a place where people can come with their wounds exposed and experience the healing transformation of the gospel. But God doesn't just zap that supernaturally through a lightning bolt. That doesn't happen through osmosis as we rub the back of the pews. God uses people to make that change occur. And we need to be developing relationships. The fellowship, it is very important. The Ladies' Book Club, the book is on encouragement, and you'll be developing that a little bit more. Evangelism is another one that we really, really need to be working on. Jesus Christ, remember Zacchaeus? You know the old song, Zacchaeus was a wee little man. How many of you know that song? And a wee little man was he, about not even half. That's terrible. He climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. I'm not going to sing most of it. But basically, what the Lord said to Zacchaeus, and as the song says, Zacchaeus, you come down, for I'm going to your house today, for I'm going to your house today. So what happens, though, is that Jesus came, and he came to Zacchaeus. He saw him in the tree. He brought him down. He went to his house. And then he said this in Luke 19:10, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which is lost. Now, on the front inside panel of your bulletin, you have this 1:1:1. That stands for, and we're going to keep this in the bulletin, doesn't have to be right there, but we need to keep this on the forefront of your mind. What does that mean? New Year's challenge that every single one of you will be able to lead one person to the Lord one time this year. That's it. And again, I have been in small rural communities. If I got an idea of where Nathan is pastoring up there, upstate New York, for that challenge to be given to those folks up there could be maybe a very difficult challenge. They are in a very rural area, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we have tens of thousands of people here. And I'm not saying that you have to go try to pick unripe fruit. There are people out there who are hurting to no end. And they're looking for someone, someone who will bring them light and life, someone who will say, this is the way, this is the abundant life that you could have. There are so many people whose worlds are crashing in on them, and they're looking for something. They try alcohol, they do other things, trying to escape. They're looking for something. But as Paul says in Romans, how shall they not hear if there's not a preacher? Who's going to tell them the good news? And I don't see any reason. I really believe that this is an obtainable goal. With the tens of thousands of people who live in Levittown, and the tens of thousands of people who live in Bristol, and Bristol Township, and Middletown Township, and Langhorne, and Newtown Township, and on we go, we all ought to be able to at least lead one person to the Lord one time this year. And I understand it because it's the same thing like with reading through the Bible. I would say, and I'm not going to embarrass you, every probably one of us had a really good intention of reading through it or reading more of the Bible we did last year, and we really kind of meant to do it, but time just got away from us, and then we got buried and we could never catch up. And I do believe that sometimes the way it is with evangelism. I really do want to lead someone to the Lord to save someone from a Christless eternity in hell. But my goodness, it's October already. And where did the time go? Well, I think one of the reasons is it's not a burning passion within us. And we need to make not only worshiping and gathering together here on Sunday, and it's not just for me, but I'm coming here not to get, but to give. And I want to come on Sunday not to receive a blessing, but to be a blessing. So I can go up to Ed here and try to encourage him, or go up to Jackie here and try to encourage her, so that when everybody leaves, we don't have to say, wow, that was a good sermon. Wow, I just love coming to church, because when I leave here, whew, burden's a little lighter. And maybe it's not necessarily gone away, but I got somebody who's going to come along and help me carry it, which is kind of what Paul says there in Galatians 6 anyway. We're not supposed to be carrying it alone. We're supposed to have people coming alongside of us. We need to create an evangelism, what Paul says there in 1 Corinthians 9. He says, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. And you and I, we have to have that passion. And I'm not saying necessarily that you all have to go knocking door to door. We have a list here. You guys got really good eyesight. Was there 15 new homeowners there? 15 people have just moved in from Hawk, Hamlet, Pumpkin, Harp, Lower Buck, Snowball Drive, right down the road from me. They're rehabbing that house. There's no one there yet. Hart, Deepwood, Fountain, Spiny Thorn. New people living here. Here's packets. You can go and just welcome them to the community. You can welcome them to our church. Give them some information. It doesn't have to be a cold contact. We have the curb signs. There still should be coming 17. We're going to end up with 20 curb signs. We've got the Grief Share. We got the Oxford Valley Chapel. All you have to do is take them out of your trunk and step on them and put them in the ground. But to date, no one wants to my knowledge, wants to be involved in that curb sign ministry. But I just don't know what to say. I'm afraid. What happens if they have a question I can't answer? Step a curb sign in the ground. You know, there's many other ways that we can get the message out to you, whether it's going to new homeowners or whether it's putting curb signs in the ground. Maturity and discipleship is another thing that you and I have to be passionate. Jesus Christ said there in Mark chapter 4, verse 16, he's got the fishermen, and they're really good catching salmon or, I don't know, walleye or bass or whatever they're fishing there in the Sea of Galilee. But Jesus says this. He says, I want you to follow me, and I'm now going to make you fishers of men. We're going to change your occupation here a little bit. You got fishing for fish reeled down real good, but I want you now to become a fisher of men. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to train you. I'm going to show you how to take that technique and go fish for men. And we need to do that. We need to have, I need to have more help. We lost, again, Pastor Jesse, and we lost Nathan, but I need more help. And one of the ways that I really need help, and one of the ministries that God has just been continuing to bless year after year, is the counseling ministry. I don't know all the full numbers, but I would dare say that the majority of the people led to the Lord this last year came through the doors of the counseling ministry. And as I look out over the audience, there's a good number of you who are either here because of the counseling ministry or your lives have been changed because of it. It is a good, worthwhile ministry, but I can only counsel about three people on Monday. Robin does some, and that's about Debbie does some, but that's about it. If you'd be willing to be trained, and you know, I'm not going to say like Jesus, and I will make you a counselor, but if you allow yourselves to be taught and trained and shown, I got Chuck sitting in on some of my counseling sessions, so he's being trained to do it himself. Just think what would happen instead of having three people doing this, we had 10. Just think of what would happen if instead of having three people counseled, their families counseled, we had 30 families or individuals counseled on a Monday. What would that do to our church? What would that do to the nursery ministry? We wouldn't have to be bribing people to work in the nursery because we'd have 30 more families coming. We all need to grow and learn as individuals, and it has to be a passion. I want to be greater. I want to be a more useful instrument in the Redeemer's hand. I want to be an instrument that God can use to bring about transformation in other people's lives. That's why we're here. To rescue lives, to restore relationships. And then one more, service. And I want you to read, you're probably still in John. Go to John chapter 13. I want to just show you something that is absolutely inconceivable. Every time I read this, I honestly have a hard time wrapping my mind around this, although you all know I'm not too smart anyway. But look at John chapter 13. Now before the feast of the Passover is when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from the world to the Father, a reference there of deity. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that God had given all things into his hand, and they had come from God, and that he was going to God, all kinds of deity here going on. He knew that he had come from God. I am God incarnate, and I'm going back to God. Notice what he does. He gets up from the supper table. He takes off his clothes. He puts a towel around himself, pours water in a basin, and does what only the newbie slave would do, and does what only the lowest man on the slave seniority would do. He would do that which nobody else wanted to do, and that is wash their feet. But again, if we didn't have the first preceding verses, it wouldn't have as much significance. He is saying, I know fully well that I'm God of the universe. I understand that completely. And as God of the universe, I am going to take the most filthy job and wash your feet. And that, in my mind, is almost inconceivable. The God who had the rights to have every pedicure and manicure available to him is now washing stinky feet. And of the one who he knows is going to betray him. You and I, we need to embrace that type of service. And there's many ways in which we can do the service. Non-people ways. Every time we come in this door, we still see the bushes are still overgrown. They need to be trimmed back. There's still ruts in the yard. And then the list just goes on and on. The parsonage is going to need to be cleaned for renters. The front church sign needs to be cleaned and needs to be repaired. We could even maybe take away some of Jennifer's responsibilities as have someone put a new sign saying up on our sign every week. But if you don't want to do that, there are needs within the body. There is an elderly person in our church, and the handwriting or the hand is shaking so bad, they can't make out checks anymore. They can't pay bills because literally, and some of you know, and some of our hands are shaking a bit, you know what that's like. They need someone to come and just help write out bills. And the list could go on and on. But I'm just saying, there are things that we can do because we're having difficulty with working with people or whatever. But there's also ministry jobs. On Sunday, working in the nursery and various other avenues, I don't need to lead the singing. Now, some of you got good voices. We can have more people up here. It was nice when Nathan and Jess and Jackie were there, but they're not only three. There could be more of you. And the list goes on and on, but we're out of time. But this year, in this idea of service, we cannot let a week, no less a month, go by where we do not do something for this family. We're a family. We're in this for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and health. We are together. God, in his sovereignty, has put you here. And we can't let a week go by, no less a month go by, where we don't give something to the family. I know there's not a lot of us, about 80 or so now on a Sunday morning, averaging if everybody comes. But is there not someone who could use your help in some way in a month's time? You know, dare not go 2 months go by where there's no contribution to help someone in this church or the church property itself. You know, when we come on Sunday again, let's not come to get. Let's come to give. Let's come to give and to be a blessing for others. We come to give God the tribute and praise that he deserves. Holy, holy, holy. Lord God Almighty, who is willing to come and wash feet, probably mostly naked, except with a towel wrapped around him. And wouldn't that be embarrassing in front of 12 of your peers to disrobe and put on a towel and wash feet? We need to come collectively together on the first day of the week and lift up our admiration and praise and thanksgiving to God. We must come on Sunday morning to encourage one another. Fellowship. The Father is in me and I am in the Father. Now y'all are supposed to do the same. With one accord, of one mind, of one spirit. The Dumas who wrote the Three Musketeers, all for one and one for all. We need to embrace that as we walk forward this next year. We must lead another person to the Lord. You know, rescue the perishing, care for the dying, snatch them in pity from sin in the grave. Weep o'er the erring ones. Lift up the fallen. Tell them of Jesus. He's the mighty one who can save them. We need to preach the word. We need to be true to our cause. We need to give the bread of heaven to all. We need to preach the word, for the Lord is coming soon. We need to preach the word at morning, night, or noon. There are souls to rescue from sin. How many of the lost will you win? We need to preach the word, whatever the cost. We need to preach the word. We must embrace with all of our heart and soul, I will be that one person who will lead at least one person to the Lord this 1 year. And that has to be a consuming, controlling idol, passion in our life. This year, we must be willing to be used as an instrument in the Redeemer's hand. We need to kind of kick it up a little bit, our spiritual growth, our maturity, so we can be a more effective instrument in the Redeemer's hand. This year, we must each do our part to better this family, to do for this family, to make this a family that we can be proud of, to make this family such a family that people will come in and say, whoa, I'm staying here. This is fun. Out there in the world, I got all that garbage, and you know all that garbage that sometimes even goes on in our own family, but all that workplace garbage and all the neighbor garbage and all the drama out there, isn't it fun when you come to church and it's drama-free? That is just a real blessing. I love coming here because, at least to my knowledge, presently, there's no drama. I love coming here. But we'd all love to leave here a little bit more encouraged. And I can't do that. I'm going to pray here. I'll go back there, shake a half a dozen hands as they walk out the door. Maybe we can work the tables a little bit, but I can't get to everybody. But if you're looking at me to do it all, then we're not doing a church mindset anyway. We could do this online and sell the building and we don't even have to meet. But all of us together, all for one and one for all.